a chance of fall, chance of showers in the afternoon, with variable high cloudiness, gusty winds.
Gusty winds, ladies and gentlemen, gusty winds.
Gusty winds at times are.
Yes, sir. Daryl Bradford Smith here for the second hour with my guest today, Jerry Gaudette. We were actually listening just now to Tom Waits. I've had some people ask me who that was. They thought it was me. I don't think I have a voice quite that low, but that's Tom Waits, one of my favorite aficionados. But anyway, here's the thing. My stepfather had a garden, and my neighbors had gardens, and gardens seemed to be part of the lifestyle I had as a kid. I lived in a place where people had private gardens. We weren't farmers. How do you get started, and what items would you start out with? I mean, you don't want to get involved in trying to grow plants that require special skills. You want to try to do things that are going to be successful for you, because no one wants to put an effort in and fail the first time they do something.
Right, and you want to start out small. Better to start out with one bed, whether it's an area in your landscaping or an area in your backyard, and do that one bed, three or four or five kinds of plants in that bed, and do it well the first year. You'll gain so much confidence, and you'll get the swing of things where you recognize that you have several seasons in every summer and in every spring and in every fall. You have several seasons, several rotations through crops. For example, you can plant spinach in your entire bed in the beginning of the year, because it's going to go in and it's going to come out so fast, because spinach doesn't like a long day of light. And so you're here in the United States, you might plant spinach in March or April, and it's out of the ground by June. Wow, just in time to put in my tomatoes, just in time to put in my green beans, and so on. You rotate things in and out. So you start out with one bed. Now, let's say you don't have a backyard. You only live in an apartment. You can get big pots, and you can fill them with good potting soil.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to make sure that you get some organic fertilizer to go into it as well, so you keep these things healthy and well-fed. And you can put those on your patio, as long as it's good sunny patio for your apartment, or on a deck. If it's a good sunny deck and it gets at least 8 hours of sun a day, 10 would be even better. And you put those out there and grow yourself a few tomato plants. Grow a big pot full of beets. Grow a big pot full of lettuce. And when you harvest those, immediately put in their space something else, so that you're rotating plants in and out all the time. We have a book, for example, at the Ark Institute called Seed Sowing and Saving. It teaches you how to grow your seeds. It teaches you how to sow them in the ground as after your plants have grown up in little pots in the house, and then how to harvest your seeds from your own plants at the end of the season. And these are the kinds of seeds, again, that you can do, because these are natural heirloom seeds, non-hybrid, and we ask folks, go ahead, grow them, multiply them, and give them away as gifts to as many friends as you can. Obviously, we can go out of business with that attitude, but that's okay. What's most important is that people go back to this, start it again, and go start with something that they can manage. We tell you how, for example, to freeze the seed that you're not going to be using this year in your own freezer, following the directions on the sheet, and then you can take those out for the next 20 years and grow them, and then restock them in your freezer when you're finished harvesting and so on. So this is getting back into the natural cycle of things, learning how to feed yourself. Because, Daryl, between you and me, and I do want to share two other things with you. The bird flu, for example, is a potentially catastrophic situation developing right
now.
We're going to cover that. Yeah, we'll do that. But the point is, there is a perfect storm developing, as far as I'm concerned, as this biologist will tell you that.
I did two segments before you came on about this perfect storm.
Yes, just by
some strange coincidence.
How about that? That is weird, and it's an overused phrase, perhaps, but it's something that people understand. And the reality is, we are looking at the potential 50% of the human race to be either sick, dying, or taking care of the sick and dying of a human pandemic. All right, now if that's the case, what does that mean for agriculture and food production if you are dependent on this handful of people standing on a patio having a barbecue? You are dependent on them to raise seed, to grow it in fields, to grow the crops for this year, then to harvest the seed from those crops, genetically modify them, or do the genetics out there in the field that have to be done in order to modify them, and then they have to distribute that by truck all across the United States.
And you're assuming truckers are even going to want to drive.
They're not going to be able to, because you know what? George Bush has already told us just 3 months ago that he's planning on quarantining whole areas of the United States, just like they're doing in Asia and in Turkey, for example, not allowing trucks in or out, not allowing people in or out, because the only way you can control a virus that is virulent and spreads on foot traffic and on people's clothing and in their lungs and so on is to keep them out of areas. Now, of course, that's not going to stop it. That might just slow it down. But all of this, again, is related to food. If folks have never before taken the initiative to learn how to feed themselves for the long term, this is the moment. This is the teachable moment.
That's right.
Do it right now.
I agree.
It's not summer yet. Get your seeds. Start learning how to do these things easy way. We just said pots. You can grow things, for example, in bags of potting soil.
Mm-hmm.
And just take a big meat fork, poke holes in the bag, stand that bag up on end, poke holes all around with a big meat fork, and cut the top open and plant a tomato plant in it.
Yep.
You know? And stand these babies up, one next to the other on a patio, if you don't have soil. And you've got a nice deep, and I'm talking something about 10 or 20 cubic feet, depending on the size of the plant that you're growing in it. And plant your plants right there in these bags, and start accumulating these as your budget allows. Starting now, get one a week, get two a week if you could afford it, and start making sure that you have the ability to feed yourself, because, Daryl, in fact, this summer and next summer are likely the most vulnerable for the entire human race in terms of the potential for famine, especially in areas that are highly industrialized and developed, because most of those folks haven't a clue how to scrape out an existence out of soil.
Well, most people think, you know, chickens come without feathers. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, most children don't know that water comes through pipes. Why? Because they've never seen a pipe. It's interesting when we look at the condition of the American public, and not everybody, but a very large part of them. I mean, they're eating highly processed foods. I think aspartame has something to do with the obesity problem. I believe that the fact that we have compromised immune systems, very poor habits. But now we're in a situation where there are a large listening audience here. There'll be thousands and thousands of people to hear this broadcast.
We might make a difference here.
A lot of people will hear this. This is going to be heard by far and wide. Now, here's the thing about it. These are things that we can all do. And even if you don't have a patio or whatever, there are programs springing up in parts of the country, in small areas where. They're like gardening clubs. There are places where the town will say, okay, you can take this little section and start a garden here.
Community plots, gardens, and I can tell you how to find them.
They are, and these are important as well. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we're going to talk about that. And please don't go anywhere. Jerry Gaudette and I have a lot more to talk with. We'll talk about. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Great to have you with me here today. We're having a very serious conversation here about feeding ourselves. And, you know, one of the things I want to recommend, Jerry, to everybody is find somebody who knows gardening. And there are a lot of people who have spent a lifetime enjoying gardening, and they know a great deal about it. And one thing you will find out from people who enjoy gardening and do their own vegetables is they love sharing their knowledge. I've got a neighbor over here. I asked him how I get rid of the gophers because I have 10 acres of land here, and I'm going to put a nice big half acre of garden in next year. And I said, I've got gophers everywhere. He said, that's not a problem. I said, well, how do I get rid of them? He says, well, you buy a couple of packs of firecrackers He says you poke a hole in the ground, and he says you blow off firecrackers, and all the gophers don't want to come to that neighborhood anymore. They just moved to a new neighborhood. And I said, don't they?
Neighbor.
he says, don't they come back? I said, don't they come back? He said, no. For some reason, he said, they don't want to come back where you did that. And then I said, we have deer here also. He says, well, how do I stop the deer and the wild? We have wild pigs as well from getting into my garden. He said, well, you have to put up a small barrier, but then you have to save a little bit of your pee, he tells me. He says, you go around the border of your garden and put it all along. And he says, the wild pigs and the deer will not come near your garden. And I'm looking at this guy saying to myself, well, geez, how would I have ever figured that out on my own? And of course, I wouldn't have been able to. My point being, and there's a point to this silly story, is that there are people out there with the knowledge of how to grow a great garden. You've got great seeds. There are good books available. There are many, many ways of doing this. It doesn't have to be a half acre. It can be a half of a balcony. There's so many choices, and it really is rewarding. I got to tell you, as being a chef for a lot of years, I've always had an herb garden, and it was always I got a green thumb, so my herb garden would always start taking over the house. I mean, no sooner would this thing start growing, we would start losing space inside the home because my herb garden is growing into the house. Wonderful stuff, and tastier food, and just absolutely remarkable. I recommend it to everyone, and this, you're the place to go for information if no one's been to it. Arc Institute, go there on the internet. I'm going to put a link to your site on mine because I do believe in what you're doing, Jerry.
Thank you.
Here's the other thing. Now we're going to go into this other subject, this most dangerous of subjects, and nobody knows for sure if, when, and how this will play out. And I said it before, we can't predict. But we do see signs. We can read potentials. And as it stands right now, it's looking like there are more and more reasons to be concerned. And let me put a caveat to that. The kinds of concerns I'm talking about are this spring, remigrating birds coming back out of Africa for Europe are going to bring a different virulence to the virus that's already sitting in Europe. One of them is a very highly pathogenic and very dangerous, and the other is a easily spread type. If they end up having a marriage, look out, the world. Am I accurate in making that assessment?
Well, we already have mutations. We've just had a mutation appear in Turkey, for example. We now have not only human clusters. They're not only small human clusters, but now large human clusters, and there are clusters of clusters, which means, since this has happened only in a very short window of opportunity, which means that we're looking at the possibility that the virus has increased its infectivity for humans. And in fact, the mutation has been found. This is a very serious mutation. What we have now is a virus that is adapting itself to spreading in humans. It is going very easily from bird to humans. I have now read two reports today, one from the World Health Organization. Another one has appeared in the UK. Two of these articles quote officials at the World Health Organization as saying it is spiraling out of control. Now, the one was referring to spiraling out of control in birds, and yet when you read that it is now in, 11 of 81 provinces in Turkey, confirmed by World Health Organization, and there are an additional 14, so that's 25 out of 81 provinces infected with bird flu and humans with the infection popping up every day all over the place across Turkey. And that's one-third of Turkey. And we have another case that just appeared in Romania because there is a Turkish citizen in Romania, and we don't know at this point whether or not that Turkish citizen just recently carried it there, or is he living in Romania and just happens to be Turk and comes down with bird flu. What Great Britain just put out 10 minutes ago, while we were on a commercial break, just put out that Great Britain is particularly susceptible. It is very dangerous to this new mutated form. In fact, Israel has H9N2, which has a particular sequence that has contributed, apparently, to this mutation by recombination of the two viral forms or types. And yes, Daryl, we have some going to Africa via the migratory birds. And in Africa, all bets are off because that's a wonderful mixing pot as well. What we're really looking at here is we are literally on the threshold. How fast? Maybe a day, maybe a week, maybe a month, but we are on the threshold.
Well, here's what I understand, too. See, the one that's hit Turkey is the low path. Which
no,
is the more,
no, 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 no.
It's
no.
Not the hot one that people are dying, is it?
Oh, yes, yes.
Well,
yes.
What I understood, though, see what I just read a report from a specialist over at Pasteur, and what he said is the low path, what it'll do is it'll get efficiency because it doesn't kill the host. And he said it'll...
Okay, you're not talking about... Okay, what you're talking about is the asymptomatic two children that were found in Turkey,
There's a lot of children coming down with it. They've got antibodies. They've been infected, but yet...
Okay.
Now, what's going to happen is their bodies are set up for a high pathogenic to find its way, because what happens once your body recognizes a virus as a
foreign invader,
it's going to come in much easier, this next type. And what we've got is circulating is 13 separate that they've actually found 13. There's probably more, a lot more
serotypes.
Yeah, serotypes. And these serotypes, many of them, 7 out of 13 are very deadly. I mean, we're talking about like 80% death rate. What I'm talking about here is right now is this thing starts getting some legs in the low path. Once it mixes with the high pathogenic, we are history.
Okay, what I thought you were saying is that all of the deaths and so on that are occurring are from low pathogenic. That's not
no,
safe.
No.
Okay, now here's what you're looking at. We have been trying to say all along or ask all along, why is this thing over 50% fatal? Why is there a fatality rate of over 50%? Well, what we have out there, as you've just indicated, is we have many different serotypes and versions of this virus, and they're all over Thailand, Vietnam, China, you name it. They're all over. They've gone across the Ukraine. Now, the Ukraine showed a unique mutation had occurred. And what is happening is the thing continues to evolve as it goes across, because viruses evolve very easily. But when we come back, we'll expand on
that. Well, we've got lots more to talk about, because this is the real meat of the meal here, ladies and gentlemen. When we return, more from Jerry Gaudette.
Scotch and soda. But in your eyes, baby, do I feel high? Oh me, oh my, do I feel high?
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We're going to go right back into our discussion after I give my website and ArkInstitute.com is the website of my guest, Jerry Gaudette, and mine is IamTheWitness.com. Go there for all kinds of information, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to talk to you again. My first report on the bird flu was January 30th of last year, and I have done 17 broadcasts on this subject. I always knew it was a serious issue, and I always treated it as such. We are on the cusp, and the last time we talked, so many people were poo-pooing this thing, Jerry. And, you know, from our first moment, the first conversation we ever had together, it was almost like, okay, well, you know, here's two people that know what's going on. I got to tell you, there are a few things that people can do just to prepare themselves physically. And now we just described how our food is not providing us with strength to fight these kinds of things. And of course, the what ends up happening is if you're a great host for a virus, you become a victim of a virus. Now, viruses of this type, even healthy people are going to come down with it. But there are things such as the mineral selenium that is extremely. I mean, I can't tell you how important selenium is in causing a resistance to acceptance of viruses. It's nature's, one of nature's true antivirals. things such as keeping, washing hands and, I mean, regularly. I mean, I'm talking about 4-micron masks. I'm talking about staying away from large gatherings. You got some other things you want to add to that?
Sure. Well, yes, you've covered quite a bit of them. Certainly to consider picking up some masks for your family. Self-quarantine is going to be the name of the game.
Yep.
Keeping in your home enough food and water supplies to take care of you for at a minimum 4 months, and that's a dirt minimum because these things will go around the world 3 or 4 times in waves, and you may have passed the first one or gotten it and got better. You're part of the 50% or so that will get better, and then you think you're home free. Well, no, it comes around again, and it's mutated again, and the mutation might not protect you, might not allow you to protect yourself with your immune system, and you can get it again in this new form. And that, Daryl, and it's very critical that we bring this out to people because articles are appearing on that low pathogenic variety.
Yeah.
In Canada, we have H5N1. It is a low path, H5N1, and your doctor source is correct. It will, and it can, I'm sorry, it can mutate and become high path, but we're talking two different things here, apples and oranges.
Yeah.
In Turkey, you have cases where people appear to have antibodies and are not showing symptoms. Now, people would say, whoopee, whoopee, we actually have weakening occurring. In fact, Daryl, weakening is a very bad sign for the human race.
That's right.
If this is making its foray into humans with more efficiency, and as it mutates, it's getting a little weaker so that we have more numbers that we never picked up before, saying that, all right, maybe the fatality rate isn't 50%, maybe it's 30, or maybe it's 20. That would seem to be good news, but think about it. You have the ambulatory ill, people sick, walking around like they do today with regular influenza before they come down with very bad symptoms, and they're spreading it around to all their friends, colleagues, workers, on planes, on buses, and so on. So now let's say you're down to 26% mortality. Well, is that good news? No, because if you have now spread it to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people, and you now have 25% mortality, the numbers of dead people are going up just because the virus is not as deadly as it was before.
That's right. And here's a caveat to that statement, which is when you have a low path type of thing, and it ends up that you walk around, you get over it for the first time.
Yes.
Your body is a perfect host for the high path when it comes because it recognizes the virus, it employs it again, it brings it back. In other words, what you've got right now is, and then the last thing. Think about this: we had 100 million possibly died in 1918 flu.
Yes,
and that was a path, and that was a high path of only 2 to 3%.
That's right.
And that's 100 million, ladies and gentlemen. And that was when the world only had 1.6 billion.
That's correct.
Do the math now.
Yes.
And we're talking about billions of
people croaking.
Now, that the idea of that, I mean, I don't want to frighten anybody, but holy smokes. Now, does that mean run for the hills? No. Again, let's go back to what people can do. First of all, take this seriously. And my recommendation, and I think you'll mirror this, buy a bunch of foods for stocks, like dry beans and things like this, that you would be able to use anyway if we dodge a bullet. In other words, if you have trouble with wrapping your brain around the investment, make the investment based upon something that you'll always use anyway. This is a first foray into this. So that if you buy 50 pounds or 100 pounds of dried beans, and you buy a couple of bags, large bags of rice and large bags of pasta and whatnot, go to Costco. These kinds of purchases will never hurt you. You'll use them. Canned tomatoes for the temporary. I mean, all these types of things, you'll always use them. If you add some water filtration equipment, things of this nature, these are not going to go to waste, Jerry. These are things that every family, and so even if we don't get it for a year from now or even a year and a half from now, we don't know when this will hit. It could hit like next week, like you said.
It could hit tomorrow in L.A., right, or Seattle.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. So what I'm saying is that if people have trouble justifying the investment,
right,
just look at it rationally and say, let me go out and spend $1,000 on things that I would use normally anyway and as an insurance policy. Everyone buys insurance for their car, their home, Why not for your survival?
The human race has been saving food for itself for all generations, for all centuries, until this one.
That's right.
Unfortunately, we live so stupidly on this just-in-time everything for economy, for the bottom line, for investors to make money on, and so on. And I'm an investor, so I can tell you, I mean, I understand that you need to be able to make money on investments if you expect to retire someday. But the point is, you also have to invest in your basic biological needs. And money in your bank account, if you have any, is not anywhere near as useful to you as beans and canned goods that you can pop open easily if you lose electricity. We're expecting to lose electricity. Lose water, because when you got 50% of the global population simultaneously going down as this thing whips around the world several times, as all pandemics always have since man began, you are going to lose some of your basic services. And this is coming out of conservative mouths. And you have to understand that you have to be able to take care of yourself, because you'll be able to protect your children.
That's
your
right.
loved ones by staying indoors and taking care of yourself for the short and the long.
Well, the next thing I want to talk about in the next segment is cleanliness and things that we can do to avoid ever coming in contact with it. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, more from Jerry Gaudette, ARC Institute, and French Connection. And, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Daryl Bradford Smith, your host today on The French Connection. It's Thursday, and my guest is Jerry Gaudette. And Jerry, I want to go to you again on, we need other things in our home too. We need a medical kit, don't we? We need to have, a complete kit. We don't want to have a moderate injury, forcing us to have a hospital care, because you don't want to be going to hospitals when this
is. There isn't going to be any hospitals.
Well, that's right. They'll be overwhelmed. So what you need to have, I mean, of course, if you've got a serious condition, you may be out of luck, but you may have to look at supplying yourself with at least moderately complex solutions to medical needs.
Right. All righty. First off, if you go to the government site, pandemicflu.gov, you will find a new booklet for families and individuals. And that is a booklet that contains checklists and so on for that you're supposed to fill out. For the U.S. government to come out and put this out, they did it last Friday, 1 week ago, they put it out, but it hasn't gone door to door where it belongs. It's only available to people who happen to be on the internet, or happen to hear my voice talking about it, or happen to go to our website where we have a link for it up on the website. And unfortunately, it's not in the homes of most Americans. And so I would suggest that you do that. Go to arkinstitute.com. Hit the link for the government site and get yourself that manual free. Go ahead and print it out. Now, that's a start. In it, they talk about you need to get meds, your normal meds, diabetes, blood pressure, and so on, for several months ahead. But you know what, Daryl? It is laughable, because most people's insurance will not allow them to buy even a month ahead on insurance. And so that leaves you in a position of saying to the federal government, okay, you're telling us to do this. I'm showing it to my insurance company, and they're saying no. Now, what are you going to do about it? Call your congressman, congresswoman, and let them know that you're trying to follow the government's directions to do this, because you know that there aren't going to be trucks coming into your area. There isn't going to be normal delivery. There aren't going to be people in pharmaceutical companies producing these drugs as they need to be produced, packaging them, and so on. You need to get prepared now to get your meds in. And I will call my congressman and say, are you going to allow through Medicare for me to go ahead and get 2, 3, 4, 6 months of drugs in advance? Because I want to have that now. I want to do that now and put it where it belongs. And that's on the government, who has put this brochure out. So that's the first thing you have to take care of. Get that stuff in now. The second thing you have to take care of is get your basic medical supplies, because I have spoken to public health officials all over this country, and they've all said the same thing. Don't count on your hospital.
No.
Secretary Leavitt's already saying don't count
on your hospital. And were you to go there, you would get the illness, and
that's
rather
right.
than... Yeah.
After 24 hours of a pandemic influenza outbreak in your community, the hospitals will be telling you, you will not be able to stay here. You need to go back home. Basically, you're going back home to die if, indeed, you don't have preparations made. Now, that brings me to another freebie, okay? Go to the same website, arkinstitute.com, and down the page, about a halfway down the page on the homepage, you will find a link to Dr. Grattan Woodson's pandemic handbook. It is about 37 pages long. It is literally a lifesaver. It is free.
Yep.
Take that, download it, print it out. It tells you how to make up the solutions that will save your life out of sugar and normal things. By the way, don't follow honey. Don't use honey if you have children in your family, young ones, because it can cause botulism in babies. And so use the sugar instead of the honey. I don't want to be accused of, you know, causing botulism in anybody.
Well, actually, honey can actually help as an antibacterial.
Yes, it can. Yes,
yeah.
Sure. Now, if you, again, that one is Dr. Grattan Woodson. He teaches at Emory University. He is an outstanding physician. He put it on himself last year to put this thing out because he, too, saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
And here are doctor's directions for how to triage your own family members, who is going to make it, who's not going to make it, and how you can save their lives literally by dripping this fluid, which is like an IV fluid, down their throats. Buy Pedialyte, buy Gatorade. These things are substitutes also for electrolyte solutions to keep you from dying of dehydration. You might make it if you don't dehydrate. All right, the next thing you need on your list, make sure that you have plenty of plain old chlorine bleach, not the flavored, not the scented, not the any of the fancy things. We want straight 5.28% chlorine bleach. It's usually the generics or, you know, the Clorox brand or whatever, but regular bleach. That is going to be your buddy, disinfecting household surfaces, disinfecting doorknobs, and
so on. And I gotta tell you, you know, I recommend Lysol as well. Believe it or not, funeral home in the country said Lysol will kill any bacteria and virus on contact.
Yes,
it works so well.
Yes, it really will. It will kill on contact. It's just you don't want to get that stuff in your mouth either. But
no.
Neither do you want to get chlorine bleach.
Right.
The other thing to do is, and you know about Berkey water filters. You know about all kinds of water.
Got one right in my house. Okay, use it every day.
Now, you and me both. I've got two in my house, and I have them at the Ark Institute all the time. We use them all the time. I'm not talking to you to promote this. What I'm saying is you need a water purification system, but don't let anyone tell you that you can get a filter system, a mechanical filter system that is going to take out viruses. It will not. When we come back, I will tell you how to get rid of the viruses, kill the viruses, and use your Berkey to follow up.
Wonderful. Well, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we've got a final segment with my guest, Jerry Gaudette, and we don't go anywhere. We have more information for you. Gentlemen, we're going right back into this last segment because Jerry's got more to share with us, and we got only 3 minutes. Go ahead, Jerry.
All righty. Very important. No mechanical filter, even Berkey's and Berkey lights and so on, will take viruses out of water. They're simply too small. They go right through the pores. But the U.S. Army, the FEMA, Red Cross, and all will tell you that if you put 8 drops of chlorine bleach in tap water or cleaner well water, let it sit. Shake it up and let it sit for about 30 minutes, and then pour that through your Berkey because it removes the chlorine from the water, and it also removes those cysts that are chlorine-resistant and other organisms, sporulated organisms that are chlorine-resistant.
Yep.
It will remove those. Now, it's very important to remember this because if 50% of the world's population is down with flu or taking care of families or quarantined, they're not going to be getting the chlorine mix right in your water. They're not going to be able to ensure that we have good, pure water to drink in cities or towns. So it's important that people do that.
Yeah.
And if you have dirty water, you're drinking rainwater, you're drinking river water streams and so on, use 16 drops of chlorine. And, again, you have to get the chlorine out of the water. You might not be able to boil it off. You might not be able to boil water because you might not have utilities. So that's why we recommend that you go ahead and buy these filters and you go ahead and have chlorine in your home, and I would get gallons and gallons of chlorine as this thing looks to be approaching.
Well, you know, all of these things, even if you were not to use them immediately, they are
right.
they are things that the home
critical.
Will go, but they're critical, but they can be used over time regardless.
Absolutely, you don't need them. Yeah.
Well, you need these things for day to day. So,
yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, why not just take the plunge and do the right thing and save yourself? I want to thank you, Jerry. You've been a wealth every time. Both times you've been on the show. It's wonderful to have you here. We seem to do a good job together, you and I. It's an enjoyable show.
Thank you.
I mean, it's a terrible subject, but boy, we just go so fast.
Yes, and I do have to tell you that folks have to, when you go to the website, we had no time for today. There is a new study on genetic modified seed. New study shows unborn babies could be harmed by eating genetically modified soy, and that is critical information coming out of the Russian Academy of Sciences. It is soon to be published in their journal, and it's important that newborn rats are 6 times higher mortality when the mother has modified soy. And
my recommendation, do not eat soy or anything with soy in it if you can manage it. Soy is a bad product. It is full of hormones. It is full of bad substances, and the Japanese have known that for 1,000 years. That's why the only soy that they eat is in very small amounts, and it's fermented.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, stay away from soy products. They're not good for you.
Yeah, there you go. Well, the genetically modified is particularly bad, and this was all Roundup Ready soy. And Monsanto's been saying that this is a safe product and so on, despite their own small rat study, which showed that there were defects in the kidney and the blood and so on. This one is very, very serious. It is actually killing something like 50%, 36% of the young rats fed modified soy was severely underweight, and 55.6% of those born to mothers eating soy perished within 3 weeks of birth. So very important for young mothers, don't be eating genetically modified seed.
Thanks, Jerry. I will
my
be
pleasure.
In touch with you, my friend, and look forward to our next visit on the French Connection.
My pleasure. God bless.
God bless. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you tomorrow on the French Connection. Be well.